Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We may be two of the very few people working in the greater Washington area today because there could be a little over 2 inches of snow today, Jim. So hunker down.
We already are hunkered down.
All right, on to the good martini now, and that's that the numbers are looking better and better for Republicans when it comes to the 2014 Senate elections. Obviously, we've still got almost 11 months to go, and a lot can happen in that time. But right now, in some open seats and Democratic incumbents, things are looking very good for Republicans. In Michigan, and this is a Democratic-leaning PPP survey, right now, Terry Lynn Land, the former Republican Secretary of State, ahead of Congressman Gary Peters, 42-40 there. A lot of people still don't know much about either candidate, but this was supposed to be a pretty easy hold for the Democrats, and right now that's looking like a pretty tight race, at least at this point. In Arkansas, the latest survey there shows that Mark Pryor is down 7 points, 48-41 to Tom Cotton, an incumbent at 41%, not good at all. Other public policy polling shows that Kay Hagan's down to 43% approval in North Carolina. Polling in Iowa suggests that Bruce Braley, the Democrat who was supposed to win Tom Harkin's seat, is having a very tough time in the early stages against what is considered to be not exactly the A field from the Republicans. So, Jim, in all these situations, things are looking pretty good.
And worth noting, when it comes from public policy polling, that really is kind of a little more eye-opening than your average poll. They're a Democratic firm, and you know, they've been accused in the past of having their numbers a little, you know, a percentage point here, a percentage point there. They've gotten a couple races they've surveyed where the results have been way off. A couple times they said they've had results but chosen not to release them because they seem odd to them. What's odd is that they had the Republican winning. So when they show Michigan, a state that's had, you know, Republicans had success in the governor's race but haven't been really competitive in a Senate race since probably the days of Spencer Abraham, that's kind of surprising. Most of these candidates right now are not well known. So this is effectively a generic ballot test right now. That right now, the only thing people notice is the R or the D after the name, and people are frustrated with the Democrats for very good reason, that they've had all kinds of bad news on the healthcare front. And it, the other thing also worth noting was in the lead item in the Jolt today is that the economy is not looking all that terrific. So if you're a Democrat right now, what do you run on? It was actually yesterday that MSNBC was saying, well, look, you know, the GDP numbers look good and the stock market's at an all-time high. Imagine what it'll be like when, you know, incumbents can run on the economy, to which the CBS poll says, no, don't do that yet. Still a lot of anxiety out there, still a lot of pessimism out there. And when you throw in the troubles on the healthcare front, it's not surprising. Lots of Americans think they're on the wrong track, which means obviously it's a certain amount of trepidation for Republican incumbents. But right now, Obamacare is not one of those issues where the public is going to say, a pox on both your houses. It's all their faults. They're all bad. At this point, everybody knows this is a Democratic initiative that has loused up everybody's health care and caused so many headaches and problems for so many people. And the Republicans did everything they could to stop it, including shut down the government in an effort that was once seen as a catastrophic error on the part of Republicans and now clearly is not hurting them in these Senate races. And what's more, I don't think it necessarily is, you know, it turned out to be a huge help for them. But if nothing else, it did kind of remind the public, look, we are the Republicans and we hate Obamacare. We think it's a terrible disaster and we're doing everything we can to stop this train wreck.
As you mentioned, Jim, Obamacare is a major factor here in the right-leaning survey in Arkansas. 62% have an unfavorable view of Obamacare, 56% strongly so. And then in Iowa, 34% approve of Obamacare, 54% disapprove. And of course, Braley was a vote for it. Obviously, still a member of the House back then. So as long as those numbers are that bad on Obamacare, anybody who was associated with it is going to have a very hard time climbing out of that. On to the bad martini now. And this is a story that we've touched on from time to time, Jim. But the latest report suggests that a lot of people in the upper half of the taxpaying public are paying now over 100% of the tax bill. That's because The bottom 40% are actually making money off the government. They are contributing negative money into the Treasury to the tune of thousands of dollars a year. Most of them earn close to $20,000 a year in quote-unquote transfers from the government. And so, Jim, as long as the president can continue to get that number of people who don't actually contribute, so to speak, up around 50 or even a little bit above, it's going to be pretty hard for Republicans in national elections to get the numbers they need.
It's worth noting which taxes are which. I mean, when you say, you know, if you say, oh, the bottom folks don't pay any taxes, they pay taxes. They pay payroll taxes, which is to say into Social Security and Medicare and things like that. They don't pay income taxes. Now, obviously, that is where the vast majority of income for the federal government comes from. And unsurprisingly, those who are making more money are paying a lot more. What I think most people would argue is that if you are a U.S. citizen and you're earning money, you should pay something. Now, obviously, look, you know, this is not a good reason to run around saying let's tax the poor. They're poor, right? They don't have a lot. But most people would say if you're getting something from the Fed, we all pay for the federal government. We all benefit from its national defense. We all benefit from their programs like Obamacare. But Social Security is there for all of us. You know, the idea that, you know, we don't have the option of opting out of the federal government. So we all should pay in something, even if it's a minuscule amount. What this study by the Congressional Budget Office is noting that there are certain people who are getting more back in terms of, you know, federal payments to them than they are in their tax payments. And while that isn't stunning, the fact that it's gotten to be such a large chunk of the public is very disturbing. And I think it is a troubling, is one of those things where, you know, we are a generous country. We are a country that believes in the safety net. But we don't like the idea of the safety net becoming a hammock. And we don't like the idea that the federal government should be there to take care of you, right? We believe in individual responsibility. You're supposed to try to take care of yourself. And if, you know, misfortune comes to affect you, if you have serious health issues, if you get disabled, things like, look, this is a country that's always going to be okay with taking care of the elderly, taking care of the sick, and taking care of the very poor. However, we want you to try to strive and rise above your troubles in life. And I think, you know, statistics like this really are going to add to this bad blood on both sides. And in the morning, Jolt, I talked a bit about this populism going through the public discourse right now, in the sense that the people at the top are the richest 1% and they're corrupt and they're self-serving and they've forgotten the rest of us. Well, here's the flip side of that, which is that, you know, people who are making a lot of money would look at that and say, well, look, we're paying for it all. You guys at the bottom are getting a free ride from all the services government provides. I don't think this constant stirring of division is good for us as Americans. And I think the easiest thing would be to make sure everybody's kicking in a little bit to say, look, I paid my share. Now let's get a government that works for all of us. And that's why I'm running for office, Greg. Just what you find yourself lapsing into candidate speak. But it really is this kind of sense of, like, I remember Bush wanting to be a uniter, not a divider. It seems with each passing day, you find some new way that we have been divided as a country. And this guy who was supposed to be this post-partisan purple president, it seems like Americans are more divided than ever before.
On to the third martini now, Jim. And obviously, it's been a very rough year for the president here in the first year of his second term. Did not go the way he would like. His approval numbers are at or below 40% in many surveys. Obviously, the rollout of Obamacare has been a disaster. So the question becomes, who's responsible for that? Many people, of course, would say the president. It was his law, the Congress who passed it, Democrats who continue to defend it. Some Democrats might say, well, Republicans shut down the government. They have been poison pills all along. But no. National Journal has figured it out, at least National Journal columnist Alex Seitz Wald. It's Adam Lanza's fault, because Adam Lanza decided to kill children and adults at Sandy Hook Elementary about a year ago. The president's immigration agenda and all sorts of other things got put on the back burner so he could push gun control. So Adam Lanza, apparently, Jim, is responsible for the fact that there are scandals everywhere, from the IRS to Obamacare to Benghazi and beyond.
This is not a particularly compelling or persuasive argument. It is true that, you know, the unexpected events in Newtown brought gun control to the front and center of the agenda. But one, it was very brief. Two, I think he would have a stronger case if he had argued that Obama's response to Newtown echoed a lot of his responses to a lot of other problems, and he has ended up pursuing a policy solution that a lot of people concluded was not related to the problem. Why did we pass Obamacare? Allegedly because we had a problem. People did not have health insurance, and the candidate who had thought Hillary's idea of an individual mandate was silly on the campaign trail suddenly embraced it in office and said, well, we're going to take care of the uninsured by making them buy insurance, or else they'll have to pay a much larger fee. I think a lot of people look at this and say, wait, that's not really a solution. And as we've seen more of Obamacare, it's actually causing more people to lose their insurance than it is to gain insurance. And we're seeing a solution that is completely not related to the problem. I think you can look at the stimulus and all of these shovel-ready jobs didn't really do much to address the massive upheaval unleashed on the unleashed by the Wall Street crash back in late 2008. The problem with Obama is not that these aren't real problems, the economy and people having not having insurance and terrible gun massacres in communities. The problem is that his solutions never quite address those problems. They're always something a little bit different. We're going to make people buy insurance. We're going to spend a lot of money to places like Solyndra and wait for that to create prosperity. We're going to make it harder for people to buy guns, even though none of the guns that were used in the Newtown massacre were legally purchased by the shooter, right? He was living with his mother and he took his mother's guns. And if anything, it points to a serious problem with mental health in this country and the idea of people who are dangerous to themselves, dangerous to others, not getting the treatment they need, not being kept in a secure environment. And instead, he decides to make an issue of all the other regular gun owners in the country. So in a way, you could say Newtown is representative of Obama's problems throughout his presidency. But the idea that it's been the first domino to fall, causing problems everywhere else, is pretty implausible. So nice try, Alex Seitzwald, and trying to blame it on some terrible gunman. But no, this one's on the president.
Jim, we know that when the president first came into office, he sent back the Winston Churchill bust. How far away from his desk do you think is Harry Truman's The Buck Stops Here plaque?
It's deep into storage, Greg. One of the things that's been kind of interesting is that also in National Journal, it was, I believe it was Ron Fournier who said, look, you know, the disaster of Obamacare means Obama's got to take a long, hard look at himself and how he is as a manager and how his cabinet is working. And he's got to, you know, overhaul his cabinet. And he's got to just completely, he's got basically saying he's got to be a different president from here on out. You might as well ask him, he's got to turn into Mitt Romney, or he's got to turn into, like, you got to ask him to be a completely different person. He's not going to do that because, you know, being who he is has gotten him as far as he had, you know, gotten him this far. And I think what we're seeing now, his response to Obamacare and everything else has been, he doesn't know what to do next. He's never been in this situation before. He's never had to apologize to the public for lying before. He's never had a cabinet member mess up the way Sebelius has. So I expect to see a lot more flailing from this presidency over the coming year because he's now in a set of circumstances in which all of his usual rhetorical tricks, all of his usual maneuvers, all of his usual partisan games just aren't going to change the dynamic of a very frustrated and angry America. And so that's my cheery, crazy martini, everybody.
Well, that might actually be a good martini, though, because if he stays the course and keeps beating the same tired drum, then those poll numbers we saw in the first martini will probably just get better and better because people are tired of hearing it because they know that he's failed in a lot of ways. So
maybe we'll enjoy Obama's second term a lot more than his first.
Jim, have a great day. Enjoy the snow. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.